All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is the comprehensive scouting report of Falcons 6th round tight end John Fitzpatrick out of the University of Georgia. And we'll be talking about his skill set and if he can be more than just a blocking tight end here in Atlanta.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family. And I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Falcons your first listen each and every day. Of course, Locked On Falcons is free and available Monday through Friday on your preferred podcast platform, including Apple, Odyssey, Google, Spotify, as well as YouTube. If you subscribe to Locked On Falcons on YouTube, you will get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio drops. And I also want to tell you that today's episode of Locked On Falcons is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this year with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline is where the game starts. So today's episode, of course, we are wrapping up the Falcons 2022 draft class by giving you my comprehensive scouting report on Falcons 6th round tight end out of the University of National Champions, the Georgia Bulldogs, in John Fitzpatrick. We'll talk about his background, his skill set as both a receiver and a blocker, what his role will be here in Atlanta, and of course, we'll sort of project his floor, his ceiling, his eye level later in the episode. But, you know, he's a big guy, 6'7", 262, local product out of Atlanta, went to the Marist School, was a high school teammate of Kyle Hamilton, now with the Baltimore Ravens. Fitzpatrick was a 4-star recruit coming out of Marist, had a chance to go to an Ivy League school, of course, chose Georgia, had the goals of going to Georgia, getting his degree from Georgia, and winning a national title. He was able to accomplish both of those things this past year, and so therefore decided to forego his final year of eligibility at Georgia and enter the NFL draft. Finishes his career with 17 career catches for 200 yards and a touchdown. Career highs came in 2020, where he got a little more than half of his production with 10 catches, 95 yards, and a touchdown. He was technically the starter a year ago for Georgia at the tight end position. There was like a rotation of him and Darnell Washington and Trey McKitty, but it was Fitzpatrick that got the majority of the snaps. You saw a similar rotation this past year between him and the primary backup in Washington, but obviously the emergence of Brock Bowers led to him being more of a backup this past year and only had about 6 catches this past year. But part of the reason why his production fell off, not only due to the existence of Brock Bowers, also came from the fact that he was playing hurt for most of the year. Right, he had to have surgery on both of his feet at the end of the season, and that prevented him from going to the Senior Bowl, that prevented him from working out at his combine, that prevented him from working out at his pro day. So we don't know exactly how good an athlete Fitzpatrick is, but he looks like a decent athlete on film, not an amazing guy. You know, my guess is he probably run a 40 in the 4.7 range, which is about average speed for an NFL tight end. He's a functional receiver, right? But he's limited in that capacity. The most notable thing is drops were a little bit of an issue. He didn't have a ton of drops, but, you know, I watched 8 games, 2 from 2026 from this past year. He had about 2 drops in those games. I think I saw somewhere where he had 3 drops over the course of the last 2 years combined. And that's not a significant number on its own, but when you, you know, when it's relative to like 25 or 30 targets or so that he's had in that time frame, that is a significant number of drops given that limited workload. You know, he didn't run a variety of routes in Georgia's offense, you know, a lot of curls, a lot of hitches, you know, primarily being a check down option. Occasionally they would ask him to run down the seam and try to split safeties down the field. And he has enough speed that he can do that, but not necessarily going to be a threat in that regard. And, you know, the other thing that stands out about him as a receiver that also limits his potential there is that he didn't really do much after the catch, right? You would figure a guy with his combination of size and speed would be, you know, a load to bring down in the open field. And, you know, he does run hard. But one of the things I noted was that he almost never in any of the catches I saw tried to make a defender, try to make a defender miss in the open field, even when he had like a runway to be like, got 10 yards and a safety's trying to tackle me. Like I'm just going to lower the shoulder and run over that guy. And, so like, you know, I think even though he's a decent athlete, it's not going to be something that he's going to utilize. So he's a guy that I think certainly as a receiver can contribute in the passing game at the NFL level as he did in college. But he's going to be a guy that probably maxes out at like 10 or 15 catches a year in the NFL. And that's mostly going to be just like check down outlet stuff. You know, when the Falcons run their rollout game and they run those high-low reads and Kyle Pitts or Drake London's the high read, which is the deeper route. And if that guy's open, you throw the ball to that guy. But if he's not, then you usually check it down in the flat to the blocking tight end. And that's where Lee Smith and Luke Stocker, you know, got the bulk of their production here in Atlanta the last couple of years. That's basically what you kind of envisioning for Fitzpatrick, a lot of those type of plays. Now, as a blocker, which was what his primary role was in Georgia's offense, he was solid, right? But he wasn't always used as an inline blocker. And we'll get into the conversation about the different types of tight ends, at least how I typically categorize them. There's three types. There's the Y tight end, there's the F tight end, and there's the H tight end, right? The Y tight end is your classic inline, puts his hand in the dirt type of guy, lines up next to the offensive tackle, can be used as a receiver or a blocker. The F is primarily a receiver. It's kind of like a slot receiver. F stands for flexed out. You know, typically your slot receiver is going to line up maybe like 5 yards outside the tackle, but your F tight end, your flexed out, maybe will be a yard or two outside the tackle. And then you have your H tight end, which is, stands for H back, which is usually a guy that lines up either next to the tackle or right behind the tackle. He's a little offset off the line of scrimmage, is not going to line up with his hand in the dirt. You know, historically speaking, the biggest distinction, because you didn't really have F tight ends back in the day, but the Y tight end was the guy that had the size, the 6'5", 250, to line up on the line of scrimmage and block the defensive line with these 270-pound, 280-pound ends. And the H was the smaller guy that was often a blocker, but was a little bit smaller, 6'3", 240, 245, and so couldn't necessarily get in the mix against those bigger tight ends. You don't have as much of a distinction today as you did, you know, 15, 20 years ago. But primarily Fitzpatrick was the H for Georgia. That's what he spent the bulk of his time doing. But you did see him, you know, line up as an inline tight end with his hand in the dirt, line up as a flex, line up in the slot, all these various things. So, you know, I imagine the Falcons envision the role for him as that more of that inline Y tight end. That's what Lee Smith did in this offense. And, you know, I think Fitzpatrick has potential to play that role, but I did think he needs to polish up some of his blocking stuff. I think the biggest issue, it's a lot of technical stuff, but I think the biggest issue for him being a more effective inline tight end is he needs to do a better job not stopping his feet upon contact, right? And that allows him, you know, he is able to get good position, but he's not able to consistently lock on and drive the defender off the ball because he's kind of tends to stop his feet in that regard. And again, that's something that you can be taught. That's something that you can be coached. He certainly has the size, you know, the quickness, the balance, the footwork to be an effective blocker. A lot of what Georgia liked to use him on are counter runs, where, you know, the running back would sort of cut back against the grain and he'd be pulling behind the offensive line to make that kick out block as the running back sort of follows behind him. They would also use him on screens and wide receiver and tight end screens or whatever the case may be. And so like he was a little bit more comfortable blocking in space than just sort of being that guy that puts his hand in the dirt and grinds it out along the line of scrimmage. So we'll see if he can develop a little bit more in that regard, but certainly has a skill set to come in and carve out a role as more of that H tight end right away. Could also get some opportunities as a fullback as well this summer, something I speculated about on the running back camp preview, where sort of who's going to get those preseason snaps instead of Keith Smith. Last year was John Rainey. I could imagine John Fitzpatrick getting some of those reps. I think he could be valuable in that role as sort of an emergency replacement at fullback in the event, you know, in week 7, Keith Smith tweaks his ankle or something. You need somebody to come in the game. I think Fitzpatrick has the potential to carve out that role. So we'll see about that. Solid blocker, you know, is sort of continued this pipeline of Georgia blocking tight ends in recent years. Charlie Warner was a guy picked up by the 49ers. If I'm comparing the two, you know, I think Warner's probably a little bit better of a blocker coming into the NFL than Fitzpatrick is, but I think certainly Fitzpatrick has the potential to get better and get more physical. And we'll sort of see what sort of untapped potential he has as we continue the conversation, talking about what type of role he'll have here in Atlanta and the competition he'll potentially be, you know, facing this summer as he in his bid and to make the roster. And we'll get into all of that as we continue today's Locked On Falcons, John Fitzpatrick scouting report. But before we get there, guys, you know, speaking of untapped potential, you know, the NBA draft just happened. And maybe you're still, you know, feeling it and, you know, you might have missed an opportunity to bet on some of these draft picks to see who was going to be the number one pick or whatever the case may be. But you can still bet on these draft picks, particularly when it comes to their future, as, you know, betonline.net, the number one source for all your sports betting needs and info, you know, already has potential rookie of the year odds. You can vote for next year's MVP in the NBA, next year's champ in the NBA. So just because the NBA season and the draft is over doesn't mean you can't bet on it. You can also, you know, bet on hockey, the Stanley Cup Finals. I'm recording this Sunday afternoon before game six. You know, do the Avalanche take care of business or do the Lightning keep their hopes of a three-peat alive? You got Wimbledon going on. You got Major League Baseball. Of course, you got future bets for NFL, Falcons over under 4.5 wins, Drake London, offensive rookie of the year, Arthur Smith, coach of the year, Marcus Mariota, comeback player of the year. You got boxing, esports, Vegas casino games. BetOnline has it all. So head on over to the website at betonline.net today and learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts. So when we're talking about what role John Fitzpatrick will be, you know, the expectation, we'll talk about this probably on tomorrow's episode when we get into the camp preview a little bit further. But the expectation is he'll come in and compete for Parker Hesse to basically be the guy replacing Lee Smith as the primary blocking tight end in this offense. Hesse was quietly one of the better blocking tight ends a year ago off his limited workload. And it, assuming Hesse picks up where he left off last year, I do think he goes into the summer as the sort of front runner to be that primary replacement for Lee Smith. And, you know, I think part of that is due to the my expectation that we know tight ends don't always transition quickly to the NFL. Now, usually we talk about their receiving ability as the thing that's difficult for tight ends to make that transition. But it is also true for blocking tight ends, probably less true for blocking tight ends that don't always come in and hit the ground running immediately in the NFL, because oftentimes you're blocking a different caliber of player at the NFL level than you are in the college level, right? You know, Fitzpatrick is now going to be asked to block guys like Shaq Barrett and Marcus Davenport, which is very different from blocking some, you know, no offense, Florida or Kentucky defensive back or safety or whatever the case may be. But, you know, Fitzpatrick isn't stranger to that playing in the SEC. You know, he was often, or sometimes I should say often, maybe misleading, sometimes asked to block guys like Will Anderson at Alabama when they played Alabama twice this past year. And so he would often, you know, sometimes, again, be tasked with that sort of responsibility of being able to pick up that guy. So he's no stranger to blocking high-level players. So we'll see if that leads to Fitzpatrick having maybe a little bit of a higher floor or less of a learning curve in transition period coming into the NFL. But my expectation is, you know, he will benefit from a year of development as he gets a little bit more comfortable being a little bit more of that inline blocking tight end, transitioning from that H-back role that he primarily did, and also getting some opportunities to play on special teams, something that he did at Georgia and I think shouldn't be a problem for him moving forward. You know, I think the Falcons obviously envision John Fitzpatrick as a long-term replacement for Lee Smith, you know, filling in that same role as that primary blocking tight end that we've seen Luke Stocker and Logan Paulson and Levine Toilolo, Bear Pasco, Justin Peel, who's currently his tight ends coach here in Atlanta, used to have that role back in the day when he was the number two guy to Tony Gonzalez back in like 08, 09 and 2010. And, you know, we've seen that type of tight end over the last 15 or so years pretty consistently. Those guys spend, you know, anywhere between 70 and 80% of their snaps blocking as opposed to being pass catchers. And that's kind of what Fitzpatrick is geared towards being. And ultimately, you know, that's a guy that could play up to 20, 30 or more snaps a game. You know, we saw a similar structure in Tennessee, you know, where they had four tight ends, Jonnu Smith as a starter, Anthony Firkser as the number two guy. And obviously you imagine Kyle Pitts and Firkser filling those roles this year in Atlanta. And then they had two blocking tight ends, and that was Jeff Swaim and Michael Pruitt, that kind of split reps there. And so you could see Hesse and Fitzpatrick have a similar role should the Falcons keep four or more tight ends. But obviously the Titans being able to maximize those guys and getting a lot of those guys playing time was facilitated by the fact that, you know, the Titans were running the ball 30 plus times a game. Right. And, you know, that gave Swaim and Pruitt many opportunities to get, you know, 30 or more snaps in a game, just basically being pure blockers. And the expectation, at least this year, you know, for me, and I'm sure many of you might disagree with this, but I don't expect the Falcons to be running the ball that much this year, just because I don't think the game situation is going to lead to them holding that many leads, you know, in the second halves of games where they can just pound out the rock and hold the clock. So, you know, theoretically, we could see a lot of Hesse, both Hesse and Fitzpatrick this year, if the Falcons can be a lot more competitive than I'm at least currently giving them credit to be. So we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, special teams is going to play a role in this competition between Fitzpatrick and Hesse. And usually, you know, particularly on the punt coverage teams, the tight end is usually playing, you know, the spot, the left guard, what would be the equivalent of the left guard or right guard spot right next to the long snapper. Now, what's interesting is Hesse didn't play that role. And historically, we've seen tight ends like Luke Stocker and Jaden Graham and Eric Saubert, as well as Levine Toilolo, play those roles. Last year, the Falcons had Adey Ogundeji and Brandon Copeland playing those roles. The prior year, it was Stocker and JTM. And, you know, as an aside, you know, when people wonder, like, you know, why did the Falcons move on from JTM? And they often sort of blame that on Steven Means. It's really Adey Ogundeji that sort of took his job more so than Steven Means. So if you want to blame anybody for the Falcons cutting JTM, it's more on Adey Ogundeji. But I digress there. And so I think Fitzpatrick, because of his experience, has a chance to, you know, influence this competition. That in a world where between him and Parker Hesse, because Hesse doesn't have quite as much experience, there's no reason to think he couldn't do this role. But, you know, when it comes down to, you know, these roster battles, like, those things can influence things. And so we'll see, you know, all things being equal, if, like, it's Hesse and Fitzpatrick equal in terms of their offensive output, this special teams battle could wind up being the thing that, you know, decides ultimately who makes the roster. Right. You know, and these are the things that often decide, you know, like, every August, like, you know, I see people, like, you know, talking about, you know, who's going to make the team or whatever the case may be. And I'm always sitting there going, like, yeah, that guy's not gonna make a team because he didn't play special teams or whatever the case may be. Basically what I'm sitting here saying, that shouldn't be a problem for John Fitzpatrick. So we'll see, you know, he should have a role on both offense and special teams this year. It's just a question of how much of a role he will have on offense and special teams this year. And that will depend on the competition between him and Parker Hesse this summer. That will depend on game situation for the Falcons as the fall unfolds or whatever the case may be. So, you know, I think even if he doesn't beat out Parker Hesse, I'm fairly confident that John Fitzpatrick will wind up making the Falcons roster. We talked about this somewhat, you know, the other day when we did our Justin Schaefer scouting report. And I basically said, you know, Justin Schaefer isn't a lock to make the roster because his odds of making the team were probably like somewhere in that 75 to 80% range, which is still very high, but far from a lock. Now, I wouldn't call Fitzpatrick a lock, but I would sit here and say that, you know, his chances of making the final 53, of course, barring injury, are probably over 90%. And so it's just a question of whether the Falcons will only keep three tight ends. And if they do, Fitzpatrick is very likely to be that third tight end. Or if they keep four, then you'll see both Hesse and Fitzpatrick make it. And Fitzpatrick more than likely will be the fourth guy. And that will basically indicate that, okay, he's not quite ready to carve out this role as a guy that's going to play, you know, 15 to 25 snaps a game and basically be a pure blocker. Hesse might be a little bit more valuable in that regard, but we'll groom Fitzpatrick over the course of the season. And hopefully by year's end, he's starting to take those snaps from Parker Hesse. And so we'll just sort of see how that goes. But, you know, given that question mark, you know, that leads us naturally to the conversation about projecting John Fitzpatrick's future in the NFL, you know, what his floor, what his ceiling, what his eye level is going to be, not only this year in terms of his contributions, but long term, what could he do? And we'll get into that as we continue today's Locked On Falcons episode, guys. But before we get there, I do want to plug the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family, where you can check out your local show. Speaking of, you know, John Fitzpatrick, check out Locked On Bulldogs, Locked On Hawks, of course, Locked On Falcons, Locked On Braves, all part of this Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family. And of course, you have three other shows devoted to all of the local sports teams, as well as national sports. That's A to Z with Mark Zeno, Hitting Hard with John Chuckery, and ATL Day Ones with Jarvis Davis and Tanisha Batiste. Find all three of those shows on the same podcast feed at Locked On Sports Atlanta on your preferred podcast platform. And if you subscribe to Locked On Sports Atlanta on YouTube, you'll also be able to check out the Locked On Braves postcast, where Locked On Braves is breaking down every Atlanta Braves win, every Braves loss, etc. So go check them out on your preferred podcast platform. So, you know, floor, ceiling, eye level, you know, as I remind you guys, you know, regular listeners of these scouting reports know what I mean by those. But if you're, you know, this happens to be the first, you know, of these scouting reports that you're checking out, you know, congratulations. You know, you're now hooked on Locked On Falcons. It is a drug that you will not be able to quit. But the floor is the starting point for what I perceive the player coming in year one, week one, whatever you want to call it. You know, the ceiling is to me the opposite end of the spectrum, the max potential that this player could reach if he gets that long-term development. And the eye level is kind of the halfway point. It's the most likely outcome that a player is going to reach. And especially for these late round guys, you know, you're more likely to see those guys hit somewhere between the floor and their eye level than necessarily their ceiling. Obviously you have examples like Grady Jarrett or Russell Gage, or, you know, you can go back to Vance Walker or whatever the case may be and find sort of late round picks that hit their ceilings. But, you know, the thing about drafting is more so, you know, the difference between an early round pick and a late round pick. It's just talent, which is more intangible and hard to define, but it's really opportunities. First round picks are going to get opportunities that late round picks are not going to get. And so it's much more likely. That's why when you look at, you know, Falcons draft history over the last, you know, 10, 20 years, when you look at the guys that did hit their ceiling, you see a lot more Matt Ryans and Julio Joneses than you see some of these mid to late round guys. So, you know, more than likely Fitzpatrick will come in somewhere between his floor and his eye level, but of course there's potential for the ceiling. But speaking of that, I don't have a specific player for what I think his floor is going to be, right? Basically you can pick any 6'6", 6'7" type of tight end, you know, that is good enough to make an NFL roster, but usually probably washes out of league, you know, within 2 or 3 years. There's literally hundreds of those guys that get cut every summer, you know, throughout various positions. Sort of the scenario I'm visioning for what John Fitzpatrick's floor is going to be is that he winds up making the team this year, but it's clear that he still needs a lot more polish as a blocker before he can be expected to have a significant role. And so that leads to someone like Parker Hesse sticking, and Hesse does pick up where he left off. Instead of being one of the better sort of, you know, players with limited workload, with a more expanded workload, he continues to be one of the top, you know, 5 to 10 blocking tight ends in the league. And so therefore the Falcons aren't in any rush to get rid of that player. And sort of long-term, you have a hypothetical where Kyle Pitts is a top 5 receiving tight end, Parker Hesse is a top 5, you know, blocking tight end, and, you know, that third tight end in the rotation is not going to be another blocker, pure blocker like John Fitzpatrick. It's going to be a guy that can kind of balance both, be both a combo receiver and blocking tight end is the ideal situation. And that leads to Fitzpatrick kind of falling out of the wayside over the next couple of years as, you know, Parker Hesse winds up, you know, taking over his role as the team's long-term Lee Smith replacement. And so therefore, you know, Hesse kind of, you know, washes out of the league within 3 years. A good comparison of a similar Falcons tight end that we've had in recent memory was Eric Saubert, right? That's kind of what happened with Eric Saubert. I didn't use Saubert as a comp for Fitzpatrick because Saubert was primarily a pass catching tight end, you know, in college. And one of the reasons why he didn't stick in Atlanta is because his blocking wasn't great, particularly, you know, playing behind Austin Hooper. The Falcons didn't really have that much value see in another pass catching tight end, especially given that they didn't really rely heavily on two tight end sets to the same degree that they do today. And Sauber's still kicking around the league. He's currently with the Broncos. He's sort of bounced around the league the last couple of years since the Falcons traded him to the Patriots back in the summer of 2019. And so like that's, you know, that's kind of what we're talking about. A guy, you know, Saubert, because of his potential, and he's gotten better as a blocker in recent years, so he's been able to maintain it. But, you know, imagine a scenario where we got rid of Saubert and then he basically washed out of the league, you know, after that summer with New England or whatever the case may be. So moving to the opposite end of the spectrum, I'm going to use another, you know, talking about Eric Saubert, another former Falcon tight end as, you know, Fitzpatrick's ceiling, and that's Levine Toilolo. And I think they're good comps because they're similar size. Toilolo was 6'8", Fitzpatrick 6'7". Both guys are guys that can contribute as pass catchers, but primarily are blockers. You know, Toilolo's career high as a pass catcher was 31 catches in 2014 when he was the Falcons starting tight end to replace Tony Gonzalez. Obviously, that did not work out long term. But you look at his other 7 years in the NFL combined, he's averaged about 10 catches per year. So going back to the point I made about Fitzpatrick, probably not going to be a guy that's getting more than 10 or 15 catches in a given season most years. You know, and I think the other reason why Toy Lolo is a great comp for Fitzpatrick is early in Toy Lolo's career, you know, I thought he was a much more effective blocker when he was lined up as an H tight end than he was as a true Y tight end, as an inline blocker. Now, Toy Lolo was eventually able to get better as a Y tight end, and that's helped him stick in the league. We'll see how much more of Toy Lolo's career. He's currently unsigned, I believe, in large part due to the Achilles he suffered last summer when he was with the Giants. He's now 30 years old, so it's not very likely that, you know, teams are going to become, you know, busting down the door for a 30-year-old player that's coming off an Achilles injury. But we'll see if he can stick around long term. But theoretically, had he not gotten hurt, Toy Lolo would be a guy that you could foreseeably play another five or more years in the NFL. We saw, you know, Lee Smith is, you know, retiring at age 34 is proof of the potential longevity of a pure blocking tight end. And so, like, I see Fitzpatrick's ceiling as a similar player, a guy that could wind up playing a decade or more in the NFL as a number two tight end, as a blocking tight end, and is known as one of the better blocking tight ends and consistently can get work as a blocking tight end, as a number two guy in the league. But is, you know, a guy like Toy Lolo that can contribute in the passing game, is not completely lost in that regard, but certainly is considered mostly an afterthought as a pass catcher. And so that leaves Fitzpatrick's eye level to be Eric Tomlinson was the player I picked, who's currently a teammate of Eric Sauber in Denver, a former teammate of Levine Toy Lolo when they had their shared Giants days. Tomlinson is a 6'6 blocking tight end that has been much more of a journeyman in his NFL career, right? You know, like Toy Lolo, he's approaching, you know, a decade-long career. Originally was an undrafted free agent with the Eagles back in 2015, but the Eagles were the first of eight teams. Now the Broncos are his eighth team that Tomlinson has played with, and that doesn't count two separate stints with the New York Giants. And I think, you know, the thing that Fitzpatrick has going for him that Tomlinson didn't is that Fitzpatrick is drafted. He was drafted by a regime in Arthur Smith here in Atlanta that makes heavy use of the tight end position, similar to kind of how, you know, Toy Lolo wasn't brought in by a tight end savvy offensive coordinator like Dirk Cutter, but, you know, certainly was brought along by Kyle Shanahan and was very tight end friendly in his offense and whatever. And so the good thing that Fitzpatrick has going for him is this regime has a vested interest in integrating Fitzpatrick into their offense long term. But of course, you know, the NFL stands for not for long, and there's no guarantee that Arthur Smith is still going to be the Falcons coach, say, 3 years from now. And if he winds up getting replaced by more of a Dirk Cutter type of coach who isn't that invested in having, you know, multiple tight ends in the deep rotation of tight ends, you could see a player like Fitzpatrick go by the wayside. And then he probably goes down the Tomlinson path of being more that journeyman, being that guy that's good enough to, you know, make multiple teams and have a role, but is not going to be a long-term fixture for a roster. Like, for example, what Tomlinson has been the last 2 years in Baltimore is a good example of what that player more often is, right? He has been brought in the last couple of years by the Ravens when Nick Boyle, who is Baltimore's regular number two blocking tight end behind Mark Andrews, has been injured. And so Tomlinson comes in as like a short-term injury replacement as their number two tight end, but essentially is really a number three tight end that doesn't get a ton of run. And that's kind of where I'm separating the difference between Toy Lolo and Tomlinson. Toy Lolo has consistently been a solid number two tight end, while Tomlinson has spent most of his career as a number three tight end. And those number three tight ends just in general have a difficult time sticking in one spot because typically NFL teams don't value that role as much as the number two guy, because typically NFL teams don't put three tight ends on the field all that often. Last year, teams used three or more tight ends on a given play on only 4% of plays last year. Now, the Falcons happen to be the exception to that rule. They used it on 9% of their plays. Arthur Smith in Tennessee, they used three or more tight ends on 10% of their plays. But basically, it's Arthur Smith, it's Kevin Stefanski in Cleveland that are sort of using a lot of tight ends in their offense, and everybody else is not using it that much. So as long as Lon Fitzpatrick plays for either Arthur Smith or Kevin Stefanski, he'll have an opportunity, even if he's just a number three tight end in terms of his eye level. But if not, then he probably winds up, you know, being more of that journeyman like Eric Tomlinson that bounces around the league, like Eric Saubert that bounces around the league. So we'll see. It's sort of circumstances that are sort of steering the ship for Fitzpatrick, as well as his development as a blocker. If he gets better as a blocker, you know, and teams see him as, oh, this is one of the better blocking tight ends in the league, he'll consistently get work because there's always going to be value for someone who can, you know, block on the football field, as Lee Smith is proof, as Toilo is proof, and as Tomlinson is proof. But if he doesn't necessarily make that leap and he's just kind of replaceable as a blocker, then he'll have long, difficult sticking long term. So we'll see how that fares for Fitzpatrick. But I certainly think it's reasonably safe to project that, you know, he plays at least 3 years in the NFL, possibly 5, 7 or more years, depending on how good a blocker, depending on the circumstances of the offenses that he plays in. And so he's part of this recent kind of Georgia renaissance of tight ends. Georgia had a nice run of tight ends early in the 2000s with guys like Jermaine Wiggins and Randy McMichael and Leonard Pope and Ben Watson. Martrez Milner, who was a Falcons draft pick in 07, kind of ended that run, and then they kind of went a decade without really producing tight ends. It was basically Orson Charles in the NFL. But the last couple of years, you know, Fitzpatrick drafted this year, Trey McKitty drafted last year, Charlie Warner drafted before that. I think Isaac Nada was drafted as well, if not an undrafted free agent. All these guys have gotten into the league. Darnell Washington, who's currently the backup there at Georgia, probably will get drafted next year in the late rounds, I would assume. And then, of course, you got Brock Bowers, you know, the new George Kittle, minus the blocking ability. He's more like George Kittle size, but Kyle Pitts' talent or whatever the case may be, you know, we'll see. He'll probably be a top 10 pick in the 2024 draft. So, you know, Fitzpatrick is part of this Georgia renaissance. So, you know, keep going back to that well and finding quality Georgia tight ends. Is basically the name of the game. And we'll see sort of if he can, you know, emerge as one of the better options in this group of, you know, this Georgia renaissance of tight end position. Is Georgia going to be tight end U, you know, known as that in the next couple of years? We'll just sort of have to see how that plays out for Fitzpatrick, as well as the University of Georgia, those national champions. And so, guys, that's it. I don't have anything else to say. I'll just be rambling at this point in time. I could sit here and spend another 15 minutes getting into the intricacies of blocking technique, but you don't want to hear that on today's episode. So tomorrow we should be doing our camp preview of the tight end position. So we'll probably rehash some of these talking points from the Hesse Fitzpatrick battle. We'll also talk about Kyle Pitts' potential. We'll talk about sort of what Anthony Firkser's potential role will be in the Falcons offense as well. On tomorrow's episode, then probably later this week, we'll have Matt Harmon on of Yahoo Sports and Reception Perception to talk a little bit more about, you know, probably not the tight ends, but the wide receivers like Bryan Edwards and Drake London, as well as maybe give us some fantasy tips as well. Then we'll have the offensive line camp preview. And then we got some great stuff in store for you in July with a returning guest, which I will plug later this week. So that's what's in store this week. Guys, we're still going 5 days a week, and for the foreseeable future, we'll continue to go 5 days a week until probably next June. So, you know, make sure you subscribe to Locked On Falcons on your preferred podcast platform and continue to make us your first listen, which we thank you for. As for your second listens, of course, check out any of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family of shows, Locked On Bulldogs. If you're in the mood to hear more about, you know, these national champions and what's on deck for them, the Locked On Hawks got you covered for all the post-draft as well as pre-free agency breakdowns with Brad Rowland. You got Locked On Braves giving you Braves coverage every single day. And, of course, Locked On Sports Atlanta is covering all of sports as well as the local teams in the lead-up to, you know, training camp for the Falcons, you know, Braves, what they're going to do, what the Hawks are going to do, all those various things. So go check out all those shows, guys, on your preferred podcast platform. So that will do it for us, guys. I appreciate it. I hope you had a great weekend. I hope you have a great week. Let's try to stay cool. You know, and for the ladies out there, don't let the government get you down with them trying to police your bodies. So, you know, we'll fight that good fight moving forward. But yeah, appreciate it, guys. Till then.